During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm gonna tell you
what you need to know. All right, let's start things off. Jesse Newell with us in our first hour. Does a great job covering the Kansas beat for the Kansas City Star. You can catch him on our podcast at 810WHP.com, of course, on the 810 app. One of the things we discussed as we were making our way through things, he's got a great story up, by the way, on the Kansas City Star, kind of laying everything out. And one of the big developments here over the last couple of years, or last year or so, whenever the since the Condoleezza Rice committee came out on college basketball, is to have like an independent group that listens to and adjudicates a fight, you know, that's like, hey, this needs to be taken out of the NCAA's hands. I've said this, both Jesse and I, you know, there's no guarantee that they'll get it, but if this case doesn't go in front of an independent committee, then none ever should, because this one is absolutely, it's clearly contentious. I think it's the NCAA's last stand. In fact, I think they are handling themselves like they think it's going to that committee. It has to be decided whether or not it will. I think it will. But I think the NCAA has been positioning themselves for a fight in front of an independent committee all along. I think Kansas has been positioning its case for an independent fight in front of an independent committee. For a fight in front of an independent committee all along. So I asked Jesse how that might change things. How, if he felt that because this is number one, we really have no precedent yet, this is going to be one of the precedent-setting cases, that because of that, my feeling was that you're going to see much more of a legal approach to this. You know, the NCAA has always been able to, in hearing things, been able to have, like, where in a court of law, it's got to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Or beyond a shadow of doubt, or whatever the phrase is. The NCAA has always been able to operate like, look, it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it's a duck, right? You didn't actually have to have a feather or, you know, any, you know, but listen, we all know this, so we're ruling this way. They were able to do that. This is a committee that, to me, is going to set the precedent of what everyone that comes behind them. I expect this to be a very legalized case, which means can lawyer tricks, lawyer tactics, can legalese, does it get harder to prove something? Does the burden of proof become much higher in a case like this because it is going to set the precedent?
I think that's one of the key questions, Saran. I think you're asking a really good question, because when I asked Naima Stevenson-Starks about this, she said it was pivotally important to talk about something I mentioned earlier, which is that these outside people still have to work within the framework of NCAA bylaws. However, you're right in that these people from the outside are not going to be married to the NCAA's original opinion as the NCAA is. And obviously, if you get to this legal stage that you are being considered for this committee, you're probably a person who thinks at a pretty high level and that would think pretty deeply about some of the things going on. So one of the questions, as I talked about earlier, was, you know, is TJ Gasnola a booster of Kansas? I mean, that's a pretty important distinction in the NCAA's case here. Potentially, that's something that this new committee would look at very strongly and decide, hey, is that something that the NCAA bylaws can get to? And if not, is this a case where Kansas can be punished? But again, to quote her, they cannot rewrite the rule book. They can't say the NCAA is stupid. They can't say that these bylaws are dumb. They can't believe, oh, this is something we don't want to believe in, so we're going to rule outside that. That's not the purpose of this thing. And again, these people are being paid by the NCAA, so they're supposed to work within the framework of what's being told of them. But I think you bring up a good point, and it still goes back to the fact that, and I bring up this analogy every time because I think it's important, the NCAA is like a homeowners association. So you're talking about the burden of proof there. You know, a homeowners association, if they see your grass is too high, you know, they don't need to know all the details. They can just say, hey, we're fining you because you agreed to these rules. And so that's still sort of where Kansas is at least at this point, that they agreed to these rules. And if the NCAA believes they didn't follow the rules, they don't have the burden of proof on them. But could that change, and could it change in the minds of people that are outside the process rather than inside the NCAA? I don't think we have that answer yet, but I still think the burden of proof here is going to be on Kansas to have some sort of legal argument to say that these violations did not take place.
And I think Kansas feels like they've got it, right? And so that's, you know, listen, there's no guarantees. Any lawyer in first-year law school has had enough, you know, training to know that you get in front of a jury, I mean, you're having to convince individuals. There's no manual. Do this, you know, this, and you win the verdict. It doesn't work like that. So I do think this will be more of a litigious, more of a legal setting. And therefore, I think it may come down to actually being harder to pin down the schools. I might be wrong. And that's one of the things I asked Jesse as well that wasn't in there is like, listen, do you think this, like, who picks this committee? Who are these people? And do they come in here feeling like they are charged with your job is to kick ass and take names? Your job is to clean up college athletics. So this is worse than going in front of another committee? Or do they come into this saying, our job is to be fair and impartial, and our job is to, you know, separate the personal nature that it's clearly gotten between Kansas and KU, or between Kansas and the NCAA, that this is our, you know, it's when it's one of these situations where we've got to be brought in. I don't know, because this is all new, right? And so that's one of the things that we're all working our way through that I think is going to be really interesting to watch. This is going to be a groundbreaking and precedent-setting case. For the most part, though, it is all an unknown right now. Andy Reid made himself available today, the Chiefs making him available today, to the media. One of the questions I had a chance to ask him is about the Rooney Rule and some of the proposals that were being put up there and how it was being portrayed. You're going to hear my question because it's a long one. Stunning. But I wanted to make sure that Andy Reid understood the context with which I was coming at him, because I don't think Eric Bieniemy, I mean, he just wants, I think he'd like to be a head coach, and he wants to be a head coach, and I think he wants to do everything he can for African-American coaches, but I don't think that's really, you know, he just wants to be a football coach. And I get that, right? I identify with that a lot. You don't hear a lot of social issues get dragged into this program. I just want to talk about sports. I just want to be a sports talk show host. I don't do sports talk to kind of hide my agenda of other things or the people I'm trying to get fired. I just want to talk about sports, right? I relate to Eric Bieniemy a lot and what I think his mindset is, you know? I mean, he doesn't give us much. Here is when I posed the question to Andy Reid about Eric Bieniemy really being one of the centerpieces of this debate and how it impacts Eric Bieniemy, the individual, as well as the coach.
The Rooney Rule has been talked about a lot this week again, and some of the proposed changes that were out there. And there's even some people calling it, you know, maybe the Bieniemy Rule, right? Eric Bieniemy is starting to become, you know, the face of the league. He's a guy that has a position, certainly has the resume to be a head coach. I've heard your thoughts on it. I know where you kind of stand, but could you detail maybe what it does to Eric Bieniemy? I mean, he seems like you. He seems to just want to coach football. Not that he doesn't have, you know, strong, passionate, you know, ideas and values and things like that. But he seems to be a reluctant, you know, front man, if you will, for this. But he's yet thrust into that role. How has that affected him as a coach? And what advice do you give him in being thrust into that role?
Yeah, well, first of all, keep being you, right? So that's always the most important thing. And it's gotten him to this point. And he'll have an opportunity here as a head coach. But listen, I think anything that helps opportunity, I'm good for, good with, as long as it doesn't put that person in a bind or disadvantage coming in, you know, whatever it is. So I think in Eric's situation, and everybody that interviews, you're in there for only a couple hours with the owners, and so do they really get to know you in that time? And I wish there was an extended period of time that they could visit with you. And we're always cramming in, you know, owners are always having to cram in these interviews, but to actually have enough time to get to know what the person is all about. And I think that becomes an important thing. The more you're with Eric Bieniemy, the more you appreciate him and understand him. and know that he's a great leader of men. And so does an owner actually have that time, or are we rushing? And some of it's our schedule because of the playoffs. Are we rushing in and okay, I got to get these three, you know, interviews done, boom, 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 boom. And does that owner actually see the worth in that person interviewing? And, I worry more about those kind of things. I mean, Eric's had opportunities to interview, but it's always a bang, bang thing. And you get a couple hours and then you're out. I mean, how well do you get to know a guy in a couple hours?
Get to know a guy in a couple hours. Based on that, you know, he referenced that couple hours crammed in interview time and time again. Andy Reid was talking about that. And, you know, it really was not the answer to the question I asked.
No.
It's an interesting answer, right?
It's a long answer.
It's a long answer, and it's an interesting answer. And I think Andy Reid opened up, and I think he told us a lot there. But my question was, how does it affect Eric Bieniemy?
Yeah.
As a coach and as a person, like the stress of being the front guy for it. And what he ended up basically doing was giving an excuse for why Eric Bieniemy hasn't been hired. I mean, it almost seemed like he was saying that, and part of the problem is the Chiefs have been playing deep into the season. So when these interviews go on, Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a whole day to sit with an owner. Right, his team hasn't been eliminated. He's got however long to fly in, sit there, have his interview, and then he's got to fly back out and get back to work for the Chiefs playoff run. And it almost seemed like he was saying that, like, if they'd have more time to sit with Eric Bieniemy, they'd understand the full man and the full leadership capabilities that he brings there. That's what I took away from his answer. Is that what you took away?
Yeah, but I don't know that I agree with it, because Eric Bieniemy is – You get the essence of who he is as a person and as a coach immediately when I hear him talk. I don't know that there. I've never gotten the idea that if I hear him talk for more than, certainly the time, my opinion of him is going to change. I think his passion, his commitment to it, the way he feels about the game, how it should be played, his philosophies on offense. I pick those things up immediately when he begins to talk. So I don't know why a coach would need more than a couple of hours to understand the kind of guy he'd be hiring. That's the disagreement I have with what Andy Reid is putting forward there.
You know, when we did this as a subject a couple of days ago, I got a lot of emails, some people saying, well, why aren't we pushing for more white players in the league? You know, there's a disproportionate number of black players, so why aren't we pushing for more white players in the league? Why isn't that an issue? Why aren't we interviewing more white players? And, you know, listen, here's the deal. We want the best of the best no matter what color they are, right? That's what we want. And I think we have that in football. And as far as the players go, I think we are getting the best of the best. The idea, and I think that's I don't want to label people that would send me those emails.
I will.
But I think there's an idea that, like you're saying, you know, I don't think anybody, I know the African-American coaches don't, and I think across the board in the sport of football, that's why the idea of giving draft pick compensation to people for hiring minority candidates was so quickly just bombed by everybody, led by former African-American players. The most vocal ones that I saw, Dominic Foxworthy, was great in some of his comments about it. Dominic Foxworth, by the way, not Jeff Foxworthy. I didn't mean to mesh two guys.
If you've ever hired a coach, he was white.
You know, I think that nobody wants an undeserving African-American coach to be given a head coaching job. The point is, the feeling that with these rules are, we feel that there are deserving African-American coaches that aren't getting a shot.
Yes.
And now, that being said, I think I think most owners would be happy to hire. They want to make money. And if the next Bill Belichick is black, they don't care. If he's purple, I don't think they care. Right, I think they'll hire anybody. Now, I do think that you don't know who the next Belichick is. That's number one. So I think there is, like, I got to find somebody who's got, you know, who I'm comfortable with. I'm going to be comfortable working with. And if you're a white guy that never is around anybody but white guys, I do think you're going to naturally, I think it's a societal issue, you're going to naturally be more comfortable around a white coach than you are a black coach, because it's just different to you. That's an issue that society has. All the rich guys are old white guys. Okay, that is a fundamental issue in our society today, and it's a bad issue. Yes, I'll say it. It's a bad issue that the vast majority of rich people are all old white guys. That being said, you can also have every intention, every want, and you can be a guy who is very comfortable having, Middle Eastern friends and African friends. You know, I'd like to think that's us. George Sharouri is Lebanese from Pro Football Focus. I love hanging out with the guy. He's a great guy. I'd like to think we all have those, you know, we are open to that kind of culture. But we also have to, the reverse side of that is, and this is where Eric Bieniemy, I think, is not necessarily the best candidate to lead the charge, is there are guys that it doesn't have anything to do with what color they are or what kind of cultural difference they might have from the guy who's hiring him. They're just not somebody who makes anybody feel comfortable. Okay? Like when you listen to Eric Bieniemy, does he scream head coach? I'll say it. No, he doesn't. Now, neither does Tony Dungy, and Tony Dungy was one of the better coaches in the history of this league, right? But neither does Bill Belichick, right? Bill Belichick doesn't scream great coach, antagonistic with the media, mumbling, saying nothing. If you're like, if he hadn't won, you wouldn't take that crap. You don't look at Bill Belichick the way he conducts himself right now and go, kick-ass head coach. In fact, he didn't carry himself that way till he won and he could got away with it. All right. So I do think that, like, I think Eric Bieniemy deserves a shot. I also think Eric Bieniemy isn't the most polished head coaching candidate that's ever come down the pike. Is that fair?
I would agree with that, yes.
And I don't think it's fair, even though this is being called the Bieniemy rule, right? Some people are wanting to call it that. I don't think it's fair to judge all 32 coaches because they haven't hired or however many coaches over the last – or how many ever owners, excuse me, all, judge all 32 owners or however many owners have made a hire over the last 2 years. I don't think it's fair to judge them and say, well, they're racist. They won't hire a black coach because they haven't hired Eric Bieniemy. I don't know that if I had five candidates in here that Eric Bieniemy would be my choice. Eric Bieniemy strikes me as – a really good offensive coordinator, a great running backs coach, and a really good offensive coordinator in particular with Andy Reid over him. Like, you know what? If Eric Bieniemy wanted to finish off his coaching resume, go get an associate or an assistant. What are they called? Assistant head coach? Yeah. Assistant head coach, offensive coordinator job in, like, Dallas and kick ass offensively. And I'd say, yeah, that resume's perfect. Like, do I think it's BS that Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy can have the same job and get jobs right away and Eric Bieniemy doesn't? I think, yes, I think there are some people that wouldn't hire Eric Bieniemy, the ones who won't hire him because he's black. Yes, that's BS. But I think there are some that won't hire him because it's like, listen, I listen to him joust back and forth with the media. There are simple layup questions they give him, and sometimes he kind of misses the boat and ends up kind of, you know, jousting with them or even just running from the question. And if he's going to run from the question of one of the smallest media groups in the country, what the hell is he going to do as the head coach of the New York Giants when they come firing at him? There are reasons not to hire Eric Bieniemy as a head coach in the National Football League. His resume is complete, but there are reasons not to hire him. The problem is we don't have enough African-American coaches hired that every time one is complete with the resume and ready to be considered, when he doesn't get hired, it's a big deal because there aren't enough to choose from. If Bieniemy was one of 12 different African-American coaches that had interviewed for head coaching jobs in this last carousel, we wouldn't micro-focus on Eric Bieniemy.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
I think it's a difficult spot for Eric Bieniemy to be in, and that's what I was getting at with Andy Reid was like, listen, I don't think he wants to be at the front, right? I don't think he wants to be out there being the guy like, hey, It's Eric Bieniemy or NFL owners are racist. I don't think that's the spot he wants. I don't think that's the spot he was made for. I hope he gets a head coaching job because he wants a head coaching job, and I think he's a good guy, and I enjoy talking to him. I think he's much more qualified now than he was 2 years ago and will be much more qualified at the end of this season because he's not going to get a job now at the end of this season. But I think one of the things you'd have to ask yourself, like, you want to really know, if Andy Reid said, I retire at the end of this year, who would the Chiefs make their head coach?
probably.
Wow. Or who would you make the Chiefs head coach?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
I'd probably go outside the organization.
I like to go outside the organization when you had a great coach to just change the culture. So if I could find another Andy Reid, like if John Harbaugh got sideways with the Ravens, I'd hire John Harbaugh.
Yeah.
But if it comes late, Andy Reid walks away on July 15th.
I'd probably go with the guy who's done it, and that's Steve Spagnuolo.
I would go with Steve Spagnuolo. So I can't blame any other owner who doesn't hire Eric Bieniemy, because I myself would hire Steve Spagnuolo. We'll take a break. Adam Teicher is next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I got the best hair in the room. Again, if you're sitting with Frank Bull and Pete Enick, hey, who cares?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cocks his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Yeah! Joe Montana has done it again!
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Niles Davis starts the playoffs with a bang! 106 yards! Touchdown, Chiefs!
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific grace, ladies and gentlemen, of the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
But first, the Jazz end of the hour answer. He's the only man to play 17 NFL seasons and start every game. Who is he? He is former Nebraska Cornhusker Mick Tinglehoff, 1962-78, 240 for 240.
Wow, that's pretty good.
80 years old today.
A lot of Pro Bowls there at the center position, too. Once you get in at center, Pete's always said it, you get in at center once and you're kind of in there for a long time. Yep. Centers do make long runs through the Pro Bowl, and Mick Tinglehoff certainly did that. Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Great Cajun food. That's what you get at Jazz. JazzKitchen.com. Put your order in for tonight. Everyone in my family loves Jazz. My oldest daughter, I love it. She's the biggest fan of Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Get your takeout tonight. They'll also deliver as well. Go to jazzkitchen.com for that great Cajun food. Everything right from the French Quarter style of cooking. It is absolutely fantastic. Cajun Creole cooking. It is Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen, whether it's out at the Legends, whether it's at the KU Med Center at 39th and State Line area, or if it's out in Independence. Jazz has you covered this weekend. Go to jazzkitchen.com. Let's talk to Adam Teicher. He's on the Sprint guest line. Adam, how are you?
Good, friend. How are you doing today?
Doing very good. I don't know if you heard our conversation in the last segment where I was talking about Andy Reid's. We played his response to my question about Eric Bieniemy being a guy that just wants to coach football, that being the front guy, which he's made to be the front guy because he's the most qualified candidate right now as an African-American coach that doesn't have a job, but he doesn't want to embrace that, or he doesn't want to hurt his chances. I don't know how to describe it. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. But I asked Andy Reid, like, does it affect Eric Bieniemy as a coach and as a person? And he basically answered that you don't get a lot of time to meet with a guy, almost kind of I don't want to say making excuses, but they have been in the playoffs, and so the meetings, I'm sure, are shorter with Eric Bieniemy than a coach that's already been bounced from the playoffs. What did you make of his response today?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that he kind of, talked about that part of it. I mean, and maybe that's where Eric Bieniemy's coming up short is in those interviews, but I know what he's talking about. It is hard to get a good feeling for a guy in a 4 or 5 hour interview, whatever it might be. So, when a guy's got other things on his plate, like a playoff game coming up. So I understand his point, but it was kind of, interesting that that's what he focused on. But, I do agree with you. I don't think Eric Bieniemy sort of wants to be the face of all of this, but that's kind of what it's become right now. So it's probably something he's going to have to deal with until he ends up getting one of those jobs.
Yeah. Do you think he will make a good head coach if he does get the shot?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it seems to deal with guys really well, you know, and I think that's a kind of an underrated part of the job. I mean, I'm not put off at all by the fact that he's never been a regular play caller. I think that part is overrated. I mean, you can hire a good offensive coordinator. He can hire a good offensive coordinator, calls plays for him. So I think that part of it is, I'm not so much hung up on that. I think he would be a good head coach, and I'd like to see him get an opportunity. I think he's done what he needs to do. So I think there have been people maybe less qualified than him over the years who have gotten jobs. So I would like to see it.
Yeah, I would too. I'd like to see him get the opportunity. I mentioned a couple, maybe it's not this year, but last year's hiring cycle to Bob Glauber. I said, can you name a guy who didn't interview well? Because, like, I think Eric Bieniemy's gotten a lot better with the media over the last couple of years, but I don't think he was very good at all that first year. And I asked Bob Glauber, I said, is there anyone you can name who wasn't very good with the media who then became good and over time? And ended up being a very good head coach, or was never good with the media and became a good head coach. And he said Tony Dungy. And I would tend to agree. I don't think Dungy's – I mean, he's a really good coach, but I don't think he's spectacular on TV. I don't think his interviews have ever been great. So I think that was a great example. I mean, not that he's like Bieniemy. Bieniemy's much more gregarious than Tony Dungy was. Tony Dungy's more of like a quiet scholar type. But I thought that was a great example. And, you know, Bieniemy's kind of more the rah-rah guy. And in some ways, he may be the perfect candidate in the sense that he's the rah-rah, you know, hellfire and brimstone type of coach that's now been trained at the hands of the ultimate, you know, cerebral, pick-you-apart, play-wise guy. Maybe he's the perfect coach, you know, you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think he deserves a shot. And, you know, again, you know, maybe that's the hole in his resume that he hasn't been a play caller. But, I, you know, if that's one of the things that's keeping him from getting a job, I think that's people are looking at the wrong things because, you know, he's a pretty organized guy and he's, you know, he's detail oriented. I just feel like he's got a lot of what you look for in a head coach. So I'd like to see it. I mean, I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I would too. All right, let's shift gears. You asked the first question today of Andy Reid, and it's about the new rule, 4th and 15 for onside kicks, and I guess you can use it twice instead of the onside kick. Twice you can take the ball at your own 25, have 4th and 15, convert it, the drive continues. Don't convert it, it's the other team's ball there at the end of the play. I want to let everybody hear this because it was Adam who asked it, and he seemed a little bit torn about the proposed change.
I don't know if it's going to pass or not. I know the special teams coaches aren't real big on that. It takes away obviously one of the elements of theirs, and then it's also the kickoff, which has been under scrutiny here, and kickoff returns. So to keep the integrity of the game, you like that part of it. On the other hand, if it does pass and we've got a guy that can do 4th and 15s. I mean, he would give us an opportunity to be able to do that. So I've got kind of mixed thoughts on it. I would probably stick, being an old guy, I'd probably stick with the integrity of the game as it sits right now. But I can also see where the other part could be exciting.
What the hell is the integrity of the game? Like, we throw that around a lot. What the hell does that actually mean?
Well, I guess it means that this is how they've been doing it since leather helmets, so this is the way we need to keep doing it. But I love that rule. I mean, I think that's adds a heck of a lot of spice. And, who was he talking about there when he says we got the guy for 4th and 15, right? I mean, they got the perfect guy for this. I mean, I would think the Chiefs would be doing this in maybe non-traditional situations, that they might bust that out every once in a while when you're not, in a situation that doesn't beg for it. So I just think there's too much to like here. I love that rule, and I hope it passes. I really would, something I'd love to see.
Well, and I'm all for putting more strategy on the coaches. Listen, I know coaches, the bad ones will manage for the post-game press conference, but I'm all for dumping it all on their shoulders. Think about this. You're down 24-0 in a playoff game to the Houston Texans. You score a touchdown, and you've got two of those that you can use. Do you whip one out right there Nope. They didn't end up needing it, but wouldn't that have been the perfect place to be like, yeah, we're gonna take the 4th and 15 onsides here and try to keep the momentum going to get yourself back into the game? Like, I love the idea. I think that the fearful thing is like where you get to, like the part I do understand the, well, we lose the element of surprise. Well, it's not a surprise late in the game where that's all you have to, all you can do anyway. And so I'd be curious if they'd make it like fourth quarter only, right? Fourth quarter only and trailing. Because I can actually see a scenario where it's like, wait a minute, we just scored to go up 8. You know, screw it. Let's take it right now and finish this thing. As opposed to giving the ball back to Patrick Mahomes. Like, I do, and I'll enjoy watching football and watching them make their way through these strategies. But I was thinking about it. I'm like, if I were playing Patrick Mahomes and I scored to go up 7 or 8, I might think about going for it. Because my assumption is he's just going to go right back down there. Like, if you're the Rams in that Monday night game in 18 against the Chiefs and you score, do you really want to give him another shot? Or do you just go, you know what, screw it, right? There's 250 and they've got 2 timeouts. That's more than enough for him to score. We've got to try to finish this thing right now. And I've got the magic play, and we're going to try to get it. And you know what? If he scores and gets a touchdown, fine. I put him so close that maybe I get the ball back with 1:30 in my 2 timeouts. I can still get down and win it. Like, all that, you know, game theory there is great.
Yeah, it is. It adds another layer to the strategy. And, you know, the problem with teams doing it against the Chiefs is they don't have, you know, they don't have the Chiefs firepower. They don't have the quarterback the Chiefs have. And most teams don't have the skill players as well. So, I mean, the Chiefs were so good. I looked it up. The Chiefs didn't go for any 4th and longs last year. But they did, Mahomes was so good at 3rd and 15 or longer. I mean, he was 12 of 16, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns, and they scored 3 long touchdowns on 3rd and longs this year. You know, that's saying nothing of the – that doesn't even include the jet chip wasp play in the Super Bowl, which was a 3rd and 15. So this is such a weapon for the Chiefs. I just feel like it's another thing in their toolbox, so to speak, that other teams have, but theirs isn't as good. I mean, it's just a pretty good deal. And I just love the rule regardless. I just think it adds another layer to it. So I'm with you on that one.
I'm all for guys if they're going to, you know, if Matt Rhule's going to, what is he making? $8 million a year for some wins at Temple and Baylor and never even sniffing a championship. And Matt Rhule's going to get $8 million a year. You can dump this on his plate. Yeah. You know, I'm good with that.
Hey, even for guys, you know, whoever, Brian Flores, whoever, who aren't making that much money, I throw it on their plate. Zach Taylor, throw it on his plate. I mean, you know, they're making enough. They can make this decision. They can face the heat if something goes wrong, and they can take the credit if they, if it goes right too. So I don't see what the downside is. I really don't. I mean, you know, particularly with the changes they made to the onside kick this year, you know, the numbers went way down. I think, you know, when you look at the 5 years, I think from the 5 previous years from whatever that was, 14 through 18, teams recovered, I think, what, at something like 16 or 18% of the onside kicks, the kicking team. Last year that dropped to 10%. So, that's basically, you know, you're basically, casting a line, looking for a needle in a haystack there. And maybe 4th and 15 isn't better, but it sure is a more exciting play. And, I think it's something that guys can strategize for a lot better. So I love that rule. I think that's something that needs to be adopted.
I read an article, I think, that somebody had looked up the 4th and 15s, and it was like 25% conversion rate. And to me, great. That sounds like a great way to keep the games going. And the integrity of the game, I'll come back to that phrase. Integrity of the game gets thrown around, you know, is used as a tool to just advance what our own opinion is. You know, what do you mean the integrity of the game? We're not having a home run derby in the 10th to decide it. We're doing something that happens. It's a regular offensive play, And safety is a part of the issue. And if that keeps more of your players on the field and not banged up and concussed and out, and you can still run normal football plays, I don't see how the integrity of the game is different. You know, there was a time in this sport, you mentioned the leather helmet days, there was a time where throwing the ball was considered not part of the integrity of the game.
Yeah, no, and you can look back at a number of things that have been changed over the years. So, yeah, I just feel like, you know, saying, hey, I don't want to do this because this is not the way it's been done for, you know, 100 years or whatever. I don't like that argument. You know, and that's not to say that I like every rule change or rule suggestion change that comes down the pipe. But this one I do. I think there's too much to like about this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. We're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program. I like that Andy Reid seemed to acknowledge no fans in the stands is real, even though Aaron Donald yesterday was spouting about, like, you can't play without fans. Oh, yeah, you can. Trust me. And when it comes to your paycheck or not your paycheck, you'll jump on board on playing without fans if that's what it comes down to. But I also really like the way he embraced, you know, I asked him, like, how long can you go virtual? Keep doing this stuff before you got to put the pads on, and you know you've got to. And he pretty much said, "Look, we've all got to adapt and overcome." Like he's like, I mean, seems completely confident. You know, there are a lot of people like, at some point we got to get the pads on, we got to get outside. He was almost like, you know, he bought. I mean, I put it out there like, or can you go all the way where you only get, you know, put the pads on to play games? He's like, whatever we got to do. Like I was thrilled to hear that. Were you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he seems to be adapting to this very well. I think that's an encouraging sign for the Chiefs is that, you know, he was laying out plans for whatever the offseason might bring. And, you know, so he's kind of embracing the difference in this season. And so, yeah, I mean, I do think that's a pretty good sign for the Chiefs that, you know, he's not going along here kicking and screaming. Well, it's obviously not his preference. He'd rather have his team out there practicing. You know, OTAs would be started by now. But, you know, hey, everybody's in this situation. And it really is, rather than fight this and say, oh, this stinks, this is not what it usually is. I mean, this race is going to be won by the teams that adapt the best. And it's encouraging to hear the coach saying, hey, we'll do whatever we need to do and we'll adjust to whatever rules there are in place. And that's kind of what's been taking place here.
We're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program. We had the coordinators earlier in the week, Adam, Dave Tobe, Steve Spagnuolo, and Eric Bieniemy. I had some people kind of get fired up about, you know, Dave Tobe saying, well, we're going to play, you know, I like all our draft picks for special teams. And talking about getting excited about Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the personal protector and being a part of that. You have any problem with Clyde Edwards-Helaire playing special teams after being a first-round pick?
No. I mean, let's see how much he plays on offense. I mean, if he's going to be a bigger part of this, then, you know, if he's going to be the regular featured back, I don't see him playing much. But if, you know, that's part of his deal, I'm okay with that. And, you know, I think he's right. I mean, he was talking about be the personal protector. And, you know, he's already fiddling around with ways to get him the ball in that role. Hey, that's great. You know, I love how the Chiefs are thinking here. So, you know, if he's on all four units and playing a lot on special teams and then having a huge role on offense, no, I don't think that's a good idea. But I'm okay with them at least looking. It doesn't hurt to look, at least for now. So, you know, and he was wondering, hey, I don't even know if the guy can tackle. He's never done this. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to give it a look. So I got no problem with that, no.
No, I agree. And, I mean, that's the reality. What, the draft pick's gone. Right, it doesn't matter what you gave up for him. You got to put the best squad on the field to do what you need to do to try to win games. I think that's the part that people forget. Like, it's not about justifying taking him at 32. It's about winning another championship. It doesn't matter if he's a role. If he's never more than a role player, and they win four more Super Bowls, nobody's going to give a flying crap.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, Dave Tobe is full of good ideas. I mean, he took a guy like Nile Davis, who never really been a kick returner, never done it in a game in college. And then, you know, I was there when the Chiefs started this experiment of making him a kickoff return guy, and he could barely catch the ball. I mean, it was painful to watch. And then by the, you know, as the time went by, I mean, he became pretty good at doing it. And you remember he had the biggest single play and that one Chiefs playoff win in you know, the first playoff win in how many ever years that was at the time, 22, 23 years, whatever it was. Niall Davis delivered it. So, you know, I like how he's thinking, and maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. But, hey, it can't hurt to look at him doing some of this stuff, and then you'll see how much of it he needs to do.
Is Dave Tope the guy everybody should be screaming about not getting a head coaching job?
Well, I think there's a lot of good ideas there, you know. And again, you know, it's not traditional, and it's not, you know, he's not the core offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. He doesn't call the shots in that regard. But I think he's got a lot of good ideas, and I think guys relate to him. So I think he'd be a good head coach too. I feel the same way about him that I do about Bieniemy in that regard. I like to see him get his shot because I think there's a lot of good ideas there. I think, you know, it's not just about the X's and O's, not that Dave Tobin good in that part of it, but I think there's more important parts. You can hire great offensive coordinators, great defensive coordinators. I think there's more to this than just that. And sometimes, you know, when you see certain guys getting a job because they're great coordinators, well, that's great, but can they relate to players? You know, can they work with the coaching staff? You know, that kind of thing. And I just don't think sometimes those things are given enough thought by owners and GMs who are doing the hiring.
All right. And last subject, Steve Spagnuolo, a lot of the conversation around him was the fact that, you know, the defense really took off in the second half. Do you expect this defense to be a top 10 defense again this year?
Top 10? I don't know about that. You know, I heard you talking with somebody from Pro Football Focus the other day, and you know, I agree with them. You know, the Chiefs defense did get better the last several games in the regular season, but, you know, look at some of those offenses they were playing against, you know, the Bears and the Broncos and the Raiders. I mean, there were some, you know, the Patriots were really struggling by the time the Chiefs played them late in the year, struggling on offense. So, you know, there was just a lot of bad offenses. Now, you know, give credit to the Chiefs. You know, they certainly, you know, earned their way with that defense. But, you know, it's going to get a little more difficult for them as we go on. But so I guess I'm not predicting top 10. But, you know, hey, they don't have to be great. If they can be in the middle of the pack, they can be, you know, somewhere 15 or so. I think that's plenty good enough on this team. So, and I think that is a reasonable expectation.
If you take the block punt touchdown and the muff punt that gave them point blank for a touchdown against the Texans, the Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken, right, they gave up 31, 24, and 20 in the three playoff games. So if you take those two off the board, they gave up 61 points. They gave up basically 20 a game to playoff opponents. That was pretty good defense, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they were, you know, that was fine. And even the touchdown the defense gave up in the Houston game, you know, the first touchdown of the game was blown coverage. Now that's clearly on the Chiefs. They, you know, that's on them, but it's not like the Texans just beat them. I mean, the Chiefs just screwed it up. So even that touchdown, to me, carries a little bit of an asterisk, you know? So yeah, they did a nice job in the playoffs for sure. Shut down Derrick Henry in the second half of that game. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but, you know, other than Houston, I mean, we're not talking about high-powered offenses that they played again. You know, 49ers and Tennessee were built in different ways. So, but, you know, hey, the Chiefs have some, you know, they have a lot going for them on defense, and I do expect, I think anything less than 15th for the whole season is a disappointment. And who knows, maybe they do crack the top 10, but I wouldn't say that's I'm not expecting that, but it could happen, sure.
Teich is with us here in the program from ESPN, handles the Chiefs beat. Time for our final four, Adam, four quickies. I'll start you with this. Does Steve Spagnuolo get another shot at head coach job?
No, I don't think so. He's kind of at that age where, you know, teams are looking for younger guys, and it didn't go very well with the Rams for him. So sometimes you only get the one shot. So I'll say no.
Does Dave Tobe get a first shot as a head coach?
No, I don't think so either. You know, he's kind of in that interview circle for a year or two, but it didn't work out for him. And then now it seems like teams have moved on to other guys. So I don't think it's going to happen for him, too.
I actually think he will.
Interesting.
Eric Bieniemy gets a head coaching job.
Yes. I think Eric Bieniemy will get another job or get a head coaching job. You know, the Chiefs have too much going for them on offense. I just think teams are going to look at him again and see there's enough there. There's enough good qualities that he could be a good head coach. So I think he will get a job, yeah.
All right, and finally, Memorial Day weekend. On the grill, you're best at what?
How about a pizza? We like to grill pizza. Yeah, we throw pizzas on the grill, and it's delicious. We cook up some veggies and throw them on there, some sausage or whatever. It's good stuff.
Really?
We'll have to have you over. You can bring the beer, and we'll serve the pizza.
I would love it. We get out done with this crap. I absolutely would be thrilled to do that. I'll bring the Corona. You'll be good on that. Right. Tell me what charcoal, gas, propane.
Yeah,
what are we talking about?
No.
Gas.
Yeah, propane. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
It's good stuff.
Wow. Is it so? But is it a made from scratch dough?
No, but you could do that. I think we've done that before, I think, but it's been a little while, but we've done that before, yeah.
I just wonder, so it's not like a Tino's or a Red Baron frozen pizza just
No, no, okay. No. We other than the crust, we kind of do everything ourselves.
That's awesome. That is really cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. I'm going to put it in my calendar.
All right.
Adam, always great talking to you, buddy. We really appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend. Adam Teicher from the ESPN handles the Chiefs beat, senior writer here in Kansas City, covering the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll take a break. I'll come back and give you the kicker before we go.
The program with Soren Petro.
Curtis.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
All right, news breaking at this hour. Basketball Hall of Famer and current Georgetown head coach Patrick Ewing has tested positive for COVID-19. Ewing isolated at a local hospital. Quote, "I want to share that I have tested positive for COVID-19. This virus is serious and should not be taken lightly. I want to encourage everyone to stay safe and take care of yourselves and your loved ones." Here. We second that. And hopefully Patrick Ewing, even being a Georgetown guy, we wish him a speedy recovery.
Nice.
And good health. Absolutely. I want to see him back up on his feet. All right. The SEC has announced today that athletes can begin using facilities on campus for voluntary workouts on June 8th. This will be under strict supervision of designated university personnel and safety guidelines developed by each university. If each university is developing it, how do we know how strict it'll be?
We have no idea how strict
it
will be.
Yeah, we don't. Right. You know, it's kind of like the term.
I bet two of them don't have the same guidelines.
I like, you know, when you hear the term, you know, when it comes to like COVID, a deep cleaning. What does that mean? You're pressing really hard on the brush?
You know, deep, not shallow. What?
Okay. Joe Flacco agreed to a one-year $1.5 million deal with $3 million in incentives with the New York Jets, you know, just because. Now, last time he signed a deal, he was the starting quarterback for one of the best franchises in football, the Baltimore Ravens. When he signed it, I know he played for the Broncos, but when he signed it, he was with the Ravens. It was 3 years, $66
million. A little less.
Now it's one for $1.5 million.
A little less.
Carlos Hyde, former Chief, amongst others. Thank you very much. Has signed with the Seahawks. He can earn up to $4 million on the one-year deal. And this is of note, in preparation for potential stadium social distancing guidelines, the Steelers are only selling half of their available 2020 individual tickets. Quote, "We're holding back 50% of individual game ticket sales inventory because we are preparing for possible social distancing scenarios this year at Heinz Field." Listen, it's a reality. but I like that they're taking it head on, and I hope we have football. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Curtis Seabolt.
You know what? When you're great, you don't have to say anything. People say great things about you.
So, Ren Petro.
All right. Well, we'll be draping ourselves in full body condoms before long, I have no doubt.
WHB Kansas City.